Welcome to Savor. I'm Danielle.
And I'm Kelly. And Danielle, I have a question for you today.
Okay.
What if I, as a dietitian, told you that it would be okay for you to eat a Big Mac for dinner, and maybe tomorrow you could have a Twinkie for lunch?
That's something I'd probably want to know more about. And if I were a parent or client or just someone out there in the world, I would be really surprised that a dietitian is giving me permission to eat that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes when I'm talking about what I do with people, they're really shocked. And as eating disorder dietitians, sometimes we describe ourselves as the undietitian because we're giving advice that so many other people would not give or be really surprised by. Mm-hmm. And today for our podcast, we want to talk about this topic a little bit more and how we could give this advice in good conscience when so many people are worried about their health.
And why actually this approach is pretty valid. There's research behind it, and this isn't just your opinion, Kelly. It's a whole movement that does have quite a bit of support.
Exactly. Yes. And so for today, our Savor shout out, we would like to go to Evelyn Triboli and Elise Riesch, and they are both dietitians here in Southern California. Elise is a fellow with the Academy of Eating Disorders. And they authored this book called Intuitive Eating back in 1995 and really introduced it to the world of dietitians. And they've had a couple of updated versions since then. And it's something that we use with most of our clients in eating disorder settings. It's very widespread.
And couldn't it even be used with somebody who maybe is yo-yo dieting or just needs more, like couldn't it be used with a wide range of people, not just eating disorder clients?
Absolutely. And actually when this book came out, I think it was an answer to yo-yo dieting. And so most of the entire book talks about people who have cycled often on diets. It's not necessarily about people who have eating disorders. And then in the back of the book, they do talk about how this could be applicable to eating disorders. And since the book came out and the ideas came out, the eating disorder community sort of grabbed onto it.
Okay.
So yes, it can be used for just everyday people, for regular eaters. It could be used for people with diabetes or heart disease, anyone who needs help with their nutrition status.
Great. Okay. Well, tell us more about this, Kelly. What is intuitive eating?
Well, intuitive eating is something that we were all born with. So unless there is something wrong with you, which there are a couple of disorders or diseases or something that could cause an imbalance in your brain. Or for instance, there's a disease called Prader-Willi, a condition called Prader-Willi, and that affects your appetite regulation. So unless you're born with a couple of very rare conditions or you have some brain injury or something, we are all born as intuitive eaters. So babies will know when they're hungry and they will know when they're full. Mm-hmm. And typically if a baby is breastfeeding, they're going to cry when they want to have food. And when they're full, they're going to stop eating. Mm-hmm. And there's not really much push from mothers or parents to get them to eat more. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, especially with breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. I think at an early age, infants are being taught though to not listen to their body, especially with bottle feeding. Mm-hmm. Because generally when that milk in the bottle is done, that's usually the end of feeding. Typically a caregiver won't go and get another bottle and see if the infant wants more. Mm-hmm. They've measured a certain amount and they've, this is how much they're going to get. When it's done, it's done. Mm-hmm. But with breastfeeding, you don't usually run into that quite as much. Mm-hmm. Usually the child gets to say when they're done, when they want more, because they just get to keep going. There's a supply coming in.
Right. And even if with a bottle, you wouldn't necessarily go and get more, I think most parents who are in tune would would offer another bottle if the baby was crying or screaming or something in another 30 minutes or an hour if they couldn't figure out something else that was wrong with them, mm-hmm. right? So, I mean, in general, babies are intuitive eaters. They know mm-hmm. when they're hungry. They know when they're full. And this even usually continues into toddlerhood. Mm-hmm. And probably that's when parents start to battle it out with their kids, you know? Mm-hmm. So you put them down at their high chair and you give them their food and you sit there and try to get them one more bite, like airplane mm-hmm. coming in to get them to feed it. But a baby or toddler still should know when they're hungry and when they're full. And so our society is very much into measured pre-portioned amounts of food to try to feed children, mm-hmm. whereas other societies are not necessarily like that. They do let the baby or the children sort of dictate how much and what they eat. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember if we've talked about this here before. But there's Ellen Satter is another dietitian who talks about feeding issues, especially with children. And she has rules that kids get to decide how much they eat mm-hmm. and whether or not they eat. Mm-hmm. And parents get to decide what they eat mm-hmm. and when they eat.
Mm-hmm.
And so that sort of feeds into the intuitive part of mm-hmm. us where we can tell if we're hungry or full. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, as the years progress, people get on a schedule. Either they go to daycare and lunch is at noon at daycare and snack is at 2 at daycare and dinner is at 5 when you come home. Or if it's not at daycare, maybe you go to school and kindergarten and you get on a very rigid eating schedule. And it continues into adulthood where, you know, you have work and you have to eat breakfast before work and eat lunch at a certain time and dinner at a certain time. And your body can adapt somewhat to its hunger and fullness cues based on the time. Like, for instance, when the time changes mm-hmm. for the first week or two, sometimes we are off of our hunger schedule, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But then within a couple of weeks, your body can adjust. So it can mm-hmm. adjust to some degree. But the point is that we get set into this way of eating according to a clock instead of checking in with our hunger and fullness.
Mm-hmm.
So when we eat, whether we're hungry or not. And then also we might interfere with our fullness cues because of the clean plate club. So a lot of people mm-hmm. say, okay, you have to clean your plate to get your dessert or just take 3 more bites or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so then people aren't really encouraged to listen to, are you full?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you are, then you should probably stop eating.
Mm-hmm.
So intuitive eating is based on the premise that we all have this innate ability to monitor when we're hungry and when we're full
mm-hmm.
and that we should eat accordingly. And then it takes it a step further and talks about what our food choices are.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of saying a Big Mac is unhealthy and a Twinkie is unhealthy, it says, you know, no food is unhealthy if we use it appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
And we're using extreme examples there. But if you're listening to your body and what it really wants, it will tell you when you can have those things and when you shouldn't have those things.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. So an intuitive eating approach would say that children shouldn't be rewarded for cleaning their plates. Or in other words, they shouldn't have to earn a dessert by eating all of their food.
That would be correct.
That they should be encouraged to listen to their body, and then whether or not they clean their plate, still be given whatever the treat was or dessert that was going to be provided with the meal.
Mm-hmm. If they were still hungry. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
And there are actually 10 principles to intuitive eating, and we're not going to go over them in detail, but listeners can definitely get the book. It's just called Intuitive Eating. So number one, reject the diet mentality. 2, honor your hunger. 3, make peace with food. 4, challenge the food police. 5, fill your fullness. 6, discover the satisfaction factor. 7, cope with your emotions without using food. 8, respect your body. 9, exercise, feel the difference. And 10, honor your health with gentle nutrition. So, do you have questions about any of those?
Well, this food police. What exactly is the food police?
So the food police could be found pretty much anywhere you are in our world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be at the checkout counter, looking at magazines, the low carb diet, the paleo diet, the fat free diet, mm-hmm. Apples are healthy, carrots are unhealthy, you know, any sort of dieting messages that are mm-hmm. saying that one food is better and more superior to the other, mm-hmm. or that you should have this and should not have this, that would be the food police. Mm-hmm. Or it could be, you know, if you grew up with a parent that was, that was dieting maybe, or making negative comments to you about your food. Are you sure you want to eat that? If you eat like that, you're going to get fat. That could be the food police. Or friends could be the food police. You know, if you have something at lunch in front of people and they start making comments like, oh my God, I could never eat that. Mm-hmm. I would get so fat. Those could be food police type mm-hmm. of comments okay. where people are judging food mm-hmm. all around us and saying what we could or couldn't or should or shouldn't have.
Okay. So to reject the food police, is that how they worded it?
Challenge the food.
Challenge. So challenge and really critically think about the messages that are being given around food.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. And for clients with eating disorders, the food police could be really severe because mm-hmm. they might start out with, you know, just a couple of food police voices, but before you know it, every single food is off of the good list except mm-hmm. for maybe apples and oranges mm-hmm. and everything else is illegal. Mm-hmm. And so that really leaves them in a bind mm-hmm. because there's nothing that's healthy. And unfortunately, there are a lot of messages in our society that back up those beliefs and fears that people with eating disorders have about food.
So I bet some of our listeners are wondering about how intuitive eating would feel toward families that struggle with kids or even the parents who are more drawn to sweeter, pleasurable foods. So going back to the kids have to clean their plate, you know, eat their vegetables before they get the dessert. I'm sure there's a lot of parents that would say, well, if I didn't make them eat their vegetables, they wouldn't eat them. And if I let them, you know, eat what they wanted, they'd have cookies all the time. So that's why I have to regulate or something along those lines. So what would intuitive eating say about that?
Well, and if that could go for adults too, right. not just for the children, sure. right? But if we wanted to take it back to basics, they say that breast milk tastes like warm melted ice cream.
Oh, wow.
It's a very high carbohydrate yeah. content. Mm-hmm. And we need the majority of our nutrients in our day to be from carbohydrates. And carbohydrates, in their simplest form, are sugars. And they taste sweet. And so, you know, biologically, we should be driven towards sweet things for our survival. So it wouldn't be surprising if a little kid or an adult always wanted to have sweet things. We've talked about this before, though, that where are you getting that sweetness? Are you getting it from fruits? Are you getting it from cookies? Because, you know, we could be getting our sweets and our carbohydrates from fruit and be okay and not necessarily need the cookies, mm-hmm. but the cookies are just a source of pleasure. And it's okay to have food that is healthy and beneficial for your health, and you should eat it just because it's good for you. And it's okay to have food because it's pleasurable. And it's an emotional type of eating experience, as long as that's not the only way that you're coping with your emotions. Mm-hmm. So intuitive eating would say it's okay to have the cookies, but if you're really paying attention, you're not going to want to eat the cookies forever. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this before, you know, where we've both been in situations where we're having one thing and then we get tired of it and mm-hmm. we want something else. So a really healthy body is going to ask for other things. It's mm-hmm. not going to ask for one thing forever.
Well, that makes a lot of sense with adults. I think that they can more easily differentiate between the different types of hunger. But what about with kids where even if their body is saying, I'm getting a tummy ache from the cookies, mm-hmm. and they still are going toward it, how could a parent redirect their child, or should they redirect them?
Well, sure. I mean, parents are there to take care of their children, and so it wouldn't be healthy for kids just to eat cookies all day long. Mm-hmm. And if cookies are just the ultimate food for them, you know, there will have to be limits on it of, you know, well, you can have one sweet treat a day. or something mm-hmm. like that and mm-hmm. set limits. That is fine
okay.
If they don't have the ability. You know, mm-hmm. some kids are going to be better about that than others mm-hmm. based on their brain chemistry. There are going to be those of us who are driven towards food and have real pleasure experiences with food, and then other people who don't.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's also a way that you word it and present the food. And actually, I was talking to my trigger point therapist this week, and he has always been very healthy and balanced in his life and diet. And he said that with his children, it was a matter of how he presented it. So mm-hmm. if he said to them, if you eat your dinner, when you get finished, you get to have an apple. And they never knew any different, right? So an apple was just as exciting to them as yeah. a cookie.
Wow.
And then as they got older, you know, maybe on their birthdays or something, they would have a cake or something, but they weren't presented with it all the time. And as they got older and they went to their friends' houses, it wasn't like, you can't have that, but I just want you to pay attention to how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you go pig out on a bunch of sugar all day long, mm-hmm. you're going to be moody. You're going to be irritable. You're going to have a sugar crash.
Mm-hmm.
And his kids were really in tune from a young age about what they felt good with or mm-hmm. didn't feel good with.
Wow.
Yeah. And so instead of him being like, this is bad or this is good, mm-hmm. he would be like, oh, this apple is just as exciting, mm-hmm. you know, and going to feed your body too.
And that is a message that does unfortunately come up quite a bit, that there are bad foods and good foods, healthy foods, unhealthy foods. And we also see that again with our eating disorder clients, that they're coming in with this idea that, you know, I can't have that, that's bad for me. And even this, again, kind of this fear or surprise toward the dietitian who's saying, no, you can have these foods, because in their mind, it's almost sometimes they believe literally going to hurt their body to have particular foods.
Absolutely. And so there are several ways of looking at that, but the intuitive eating approach would say that there are no good or bad foods. And so, yes, you and I could sit here and debate whether an apple was healthier than a cookie, right? And but I could also tell you the health benefits of both. You know, that there, when we get down to basic nutrition, there are macronutrients or vitamins or minerals that you could use in both of those foods.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing, that there are health benefits to most foods. But another thing that I work with my clients on frequently, and I don't think it's not described this way in intuitive eating, but it's the same premise, which is this a supportive choice or not in this moment? And so instead of saying apples are always good
mm-hmm.
and cookies are always bad, it is, in this moment, is this a supportive choice or not?
Mm-hmm.
So if I have not eaten anything all day, except for apples probably aren't very good.
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer a good food if I'm living on apples.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a supportive choice for me. If I'm eating a balanced diet and I'm missing out on some fruit that day and I choose an apple, then it is a good food or a supportive choice for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then the same thing with a cookie. Like if I'm alone and I'm depressed and if I'm really vulnerable and I eat a cookie and I might start binging, mm-hmm. then a cookie is probably not good. It's probably not a supportive choice for me.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm at a friend's birthday party or I go home for Christmas and my mom makes my favorite cookies, those cookies are probably good. I should participate and enjoy them in a supportive environment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's instead of labeling something absolutely yes or absolutely no,
mm-hmm.
it's situation by situation. And so with our eating disorder clients, something that I always remind them is that there is not one single food that could be worse for them than their eating disorder. Because as we have talked about before, Danielle, they're the highest mortality rate of any mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, eating a Big Mac any day of the week is going to be healthier for you than binging or purging or starving to death.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Mm-hmm.
Or another thing that will come up is they might be in college or they might be on a road trip with a friend or something. And the normal eating behavior thing to do would be to stop and get fast food.
Mm-hmm.
And our clients would often say, well, I would rather starve than eat a Big Mac on a road trip. But that's not the better choice. That's not the supportive choice for your body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do I think you should eat a Big Mac every day? No, not really. But in situations, it is okay to have food like mm-hmm. that. It's about balance and moderation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like that. Supported choice. I hadn't framed it that way before, but it makes a lot of sense, and it can easily reframe a lot of decisions around food and even a lot of the controversy around intuitive eating. You know, I think what you're describing now could speak to a lot of the disagreements we hear about this choice, that it's often, it gets taken to extremes of all or none, and really that's not what intuitive eating is about. Like you've been saying, like it's not about saying, yes, have cookies all day, every day. Right? It's moment by moment, you know, what do you need in that moment? What are the options available to you in that moment? And going with that.
And Danielle, you might be able to speak to this a little bit, but it's also human nature to want something that you think you're not supposed to or can't have. And so an example in regular life would be that, you know, if I wanted to go, this actually happened to me, to homecoming with a boy in high school, and my parents told me I couldn't do it, I'm really going to want to do it really bad. Mm-hmm. And I might go to great lengths to make that happen. I might sneak around. Who knows what I might do to do it.
What you did do.
Right. And the same happens with food. If we set up all of these rules saying yes, this and no, this, most likely the thing that we're going to really want is the thing that we're saying no to. And so that's the other premise behind intuitive eating, that if you're giving yourself permission to everything, then you're not going to want to this extreme degree the other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is exactly what we also see with thoughts. So when people tell themselves, don't think about this, you obsess about it more. Or, you know, they talk about the example of like, don't think about a pink elephant. Mm-hmm. You know, you do. You just think mm-hmm. about it because you're trying so hard not to. How can you not? It also reminds me of an exercise you did with one of my classes at UCSD when you came to a guest lecture, and you have the students hold their breath for as long as they could. Is that right?
Yeah.
And then you, so essentially you're telling them, you know, you can't breathe and don't breathe. And then mm-hmm. when you gave them finally permission to breathe, everybody's like, you know, mm-hmm. like gasping for mm-hmm. as much air as they can get, right? And it actually wasn't really maybe that long that you had them hold their breath. It wasn't like an extreme amount or anything mm-hmm. at all. But you were demonstrating that, you know, when you restrict or you don't allow yourself to have something, the response is going to be an overcompensation mm-hmm. for it. You're going to want to, you know, either in food examples, take in more, or with the air example, you're going to be gasping in for much more air. Right. So there is obviously some biological things happening there with breath, but I feel like it was a good example of what you were speaking to when people say they can't have a certain food.
Mm-hmm. But it also biological things that are happening when you're going on a diet or restricting foods too, you
know? That's true, yeah.
And so the woman who created that activity, she calls it the air diet, you know, and she's like, when you go on an air diet, you can't think about anything but breathing. You can't think about anything but your next breath. And when you can breathe, you're going to gasp for air and take extra breaths. Or same thing with sleep. If you're not sleeping, you know, you're going to be thinking about sleep and when can I get in bed? And it's the same thing with dieting because it's all physiologically driven. Mm-hmm. And we think that we can override all of those things, but mm-hmm. we can't. Our body is really smart.
Mm-hmm.
And actually the author Evelyn of this book, Intuitive Eating, and I tell my patients this and they always think I'm crazy. But she said, oh, I was talking to her at a conference and she said, it's like intuitive peeing. So like going pee and, you know, when we have to go pee, we don't usually think about it. We usually just, oh, I have to go pee and I go mm-hmm. and we don't usually think, oh gosh, I just peed a lot or I just peed a little. Or if we do pee, we don't think like, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have to pee again because I just peed an hour ago. We just pee. And it's this very sensitive relationship with our kidneys and hormones and signals to our brain and, you know, the fullness of our bladder that's all giving us messages. We have to go pee and we don't usually question it. Mm-hmm. Same thing with intuitive eating. It is our stomach, the fullness of our stomach, what kind of messages it's giving to our brain, and when it's telling us, do we need to eat or not? But yet mm-hmm. we're always, not always, but often questioning, why am I hungry? Why mm-hmm. do I need to eat right now? Oh my gosh, I ate so much today. I ate so much yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, when really it's just this little system in our body that's telling mm-hmm. us what we need to do, but mm-hmm. we don't trust it like we do other systems, mm-hmm. like our breathing or our peeing.
I again would imagine that our listeners would be thinking about processed foods, because mm-hmm. we hear messages that processed foods will distort our hunger and fullness food, or hunger and fullness signals, by making us feel fuller than we actually are, because of how certain foods have been made, and made more for the life on a shelf and not really maybe with the nutritional value in mind of the person eating it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. And so if you're eating all processed foods, and your hunger and fullness cues could be a little bit off. And so you said that it might make you fuller, but actually you might not usually feel as full okay. if you're eating something that's processed. And that's typically because it doesn't have as much of a fiber content. Mm. And so we're not physically filling up. We don't have that bulk in our diet. Mm. So if we're having a variety of food, then we would be much more in tune with our hunger and fullness signals mm-hmm. versus if we were just having something like macaroni box cheese, mm-hmm. you know, every single meal, that might be filling in the moment, but it's not going to stick around with us that long because we don't have to do as much work to digest it, and it wouldn't have as much of a fiber content or something hmm. as something that we made ourselves mm-hmm. or that was more natural.
Okay.
So there are food choices that mm-hmm. could interfere with this, mm-hmm. But the intuitive eating principle imagines that you are having all foods in variety in moderation, and so it's going to account for those types mm-hmm. of things.
Okay.
And really getting in touch too and noticing, well, when I eat this, I don't feel that great. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I'll give you an example with myself with bananas. That is a really healthy food, right? you
yeah.
think of.
Yeah.
And it is a natural food, and it does have a fiber content in it. But when my body digests bananas, whatever reason, it digests them really quickly. And whenever I eat a banana, I am starving mm-hmm. within like 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really matter if I have like peanut butter with it or whatever. If mm-hmm. I eat bananas, they make me really hungry. Mm. And so that's something that I've learned about myself, that mm-hmm. if I have a banana, I need to be planning on having a snack soon thereafter. Mm-hmm. So as you're getting in touch with yourself, you'll start to notice if I eat this, then I feel this way. And if I eat this, I feel this way, and start to make adjustments.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what about people who say that their body doesn't tell them? Because I know a couple people who they don't really feel full. And if they do, it's very delayed. And then by then they've maybe eaten quite a bit and much more than their body maybe needed in that given amount of time. And sometimes it even leads them to feeling actual pain because mm-hmm. they continue to eat for so long. And this is one that it's tricky for me to imagine what that's like, because my body is pretty loud with its mm-hmm. signals. When I'm hungry, I'm I'm really hungry. And I usually always bring food with me because it's so uncomfortable for me to be hungry that I actually feel a little bit anxious if I don't have food accessible mm-hmm. and, you know, fear, what if I get hungry? I want to make sure mm-hmm. I can eat. And my body will also typically give me a good warning sign when I'm getting close to fullness. And so I can start to decide what I want to do at that point. And if I go over fullness, it's really painful. I really also don't like that feeling. And it usually takes a while to go away. I'm not really actually able to do much because it's really distracting. So when someone does say their body doesn't do that, what might be going on for them? And is that true, that there can be some people who they really have distorted signals?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So let's first address somebody who doesn't have an eating disorder, who might just be a regular, normal eater. Mm-hmm. And if they were telling me that they weren't getting full and that they were getting way past the point of fullness, the first thing that I would talk to them about is their pace of eating. because there are several hormones and neurotransmitters in our stomach that give signals to our brain. And a couple of them, one is ghrelin, and it kind of sounds like growling, and it tells your brain when you're hungry. And the other one is CCK, and it tells your brain when you're full. But there are a lot more that get involved in this process. But they're housed in your stomach, and it really does. You've heard people say, eat slow. It takes 20 minutes to tell when you're full. It really does take at least 20 minutes for those to get activated and for your brain to receive the message that you are feeling full. Mm-hmm. So if I was talking to someone who told me I don't get those full feelings, I would ask them how quickly they're eating, because if they're eating really fast and not taking moments between bites and their meals only lasting 10 minutes or something, I would probably recommend that they slow down and see if that still keeps happening. Mm-hmm. The other things that I would look at would be like the fiber content of the meal, because again, like if you were eating something that was highly processed and low fiber content, you might eat a ton of food before you started to feel full. You wouldn't have to chew very much, and you could just really pound it down without noticing that full feeling until it was too late. Or fat content of the food too, because fat actually has a certain mouthfeel as soon as it hits our tongue that starts to go to our brain and tell us that we're satisfied. And so maybe the fat content of the meal was off too. Mm-hmm. So those would be some things that I would explore mm-hmm. with that person. With somebody who might be like a long-term dieter or a binger, that would be another thing to explore, because they have really overridden their hunger and fullness cues for so long that their body is just really confused. For somebody who's had gastric bypass, they're cutting out part of the stomach where those hunger and fullness neurotransmitters and hormones live. And so that's going to affect their hunger and fullness. And then with people with eating disorders, after you've starved or binged or purged for so long, you know, eating disorder clients in the early stages of recovery can't really tell when they're hungry or full. Their brain really does shut down those mechanisms as sort of a self-preservation. So there are times when people can't tell initially. And so the intuitive eating process is a process, and there are usually steps that you take, and you know, probably need someone to help you through that process. Mm-hmm. So we often start with mechanical eating, which is a prescribed schedule, a prescribed amount, assignments, looking into how I feel, what is my body telling me, before we actually get to that point of totally trusting our hunger and fullness. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like for you, you probably just have really sensitive receptors in your body. And, you know, I don't know a lot about that, so I can't speak to it, but I know that some people have more sensitive pain receptors than mm-hmm. others. And so if you're feeling really full and uncomfortable, it could be because of that. Mm-hmm. But I also know you, and I know that you're pretty mindful and take your time with things. And so you might just really be taking enough time and paying attention mm-hmm. to how you feel.
Okay. Maybe you have a low tolerance for discomfort. Yeah. So it seems more excruciating mm-hmm. than it really is. So another piece we come across in our work are people who believe they're addicted to sugar. And so this would be another group who probably would have some problems with an intuitive eating approach. They would say they couldn't do that with sugar because they are actually physically addicted to sugar. And for them, they'd argue they'd have to cut out sugar from their diet completely and that there's really no hope for them. Mm-hmm. So what would we tell them?
Well, I mean, there is a whole school of thought around sugar addiction, and there is some research backing it up, but people need to get really educated about this before they just decide, I am addicted to sugar. So we might have talked about this before, about how our body, well, I mentioned it today, but I think I talked about it before, how our body runs on carbohydrates, and yes, that sugar is the, you know, simplest form of carbs. And mm-hmm. so anytime you are restricting your food, your body's going to start craving sugar. So anybody who has been on and off of diets their whole life, yo-yo dieted, they're not eating well, they're going, you know, maybe eat something for breakfast and then don't eat again until dinner, they're going to have some out of control feelings with sugar. Mm. And so before I decided that someone was addicted, quote unquote, to sugar, I would really work with them for a while on normalizing their eating habits mm-hmm. and seeing what was happening. I would also work on all these, you know, messages that they've given themselves about food and, you know, if they were off limits for certain reasons or emotional hangups with food for whatever reason. I would work through all of that with them. And so the sugar addiction people, you know, they have looked at functional MRIs of the brain and they do see that there are certain areas of the brain that light up, you know, with our dopamine receptors and things that give us pleasure. And those are the same centers that light up when people are using drugs. Mm-hmm. And the thought is that you can sort of saturate those receptors. And so you're going to need a higher and higher and higher amount of that food to satisfy yourself. But doing this for 12 years, I can tell you that, you know, 99% of the people that I work with who come in and tell me that they're addicted to sugar, once we normalize their eating, they are not. You know, they can work with those foods that they thought that they could not mm-hmm. handle. Mm-hmm. And the other thing too, I guess, that would differentiate is that, you know, if somebody is an alcoholic, they're addicted to alcohol and it doesn't matter if that's a beer or wine or rum or, you know, it's mm-hmm. just alcohol. With sugar addiction, you're not actually addicted to the sugar. So mm-hmm. like, you know, people aren't necessarily shoveling in tablespoonfuls of white granulated sugar. Mm-hmm. And if it was an addiction like alcohol or drugs or something like that, you would be.
Right.
You'd be opening up sugar packets just trying to get your fix.
Right.
So people with these addictions, it's usually to one or two types of very specific food. Mm-hmm. Like for one person, it might be M&Ms, or for another person, it might be apple pie, or another person, it could be a donut, mm-hmm. you know? So it's usually a very specific, not blanket type mm-hmm. of problem. And so with the research that I've done and listened to and read books on, it seems as if to me, the way I understand it or make sense of it is that it's more like a learned behavior. So what was your food story with M&Ms? Mm-hmm. Was that like, you know, every time you did something good, you got M&Ms as a reward, or every time you came home sad, did you get M&Ms as a reward? Because if you did, then you started making all these neural pathways in your brain that connected all these different emotions with M&Ms. Mm-hmm. And then when you didn't have any better coping skills, M&Ms were the thing that you just turned to, and you might have become out of control with it. Mm-hmm. And the good thing about learned behaviors is that they can be unlearned. Mm-hmm. And so those neural pathways might be pretty set. It might be like a 5-lane freeway in your brain. But we can start making like little dirt paths mm-hmm. that are going to be different with M&Ms that make you more able to handle those. Mm-hmm. So this is very controversial, and mm-hmm. some people won't agree with what I'm saying. But just from my practical clinical experience, most people can get past what they believe to be a sugar addiction. Mm-hmm. And there are some people who are still going to have those trigger foods, and maybe they just need to stay away from them mm-hmm. forever. But it's not going to be as frequent as people might think.
And I know you've also brought up before with this sugar addiction idea that you also can't be necessarily addicted to something that you physically need to survive.
Right.
Like kind of going back to the air example, like mm-hmm. you're not going to be addicted to oxygen.
Right.
You know, and so sugar is something that we do need to survive. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't really make sense to have an addiction to a basic need.
Exactly. Sugar equals carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. We're talking about it that like that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So we have covered, well, I think almost all the different controversy that comes up with intuitive eating. Another piece that sometimes comes up, and it kind of goes back to the idea of, well, you know, what if you can't tell, you know, when you're hungry and full? And one of the tools that I've used with clients that I really like, it actually came from a program called Full of Ourselves, which is a prevention program for eating disorders that came out of Harvard University. And they had this handout called Menu of Hungers. And so the program's usually for middle schoolers, but I think it's actually great for all ages, mm-hmm. the Menu of Hungers. And it was a way for people to start to identify the different needs that they have. And so
sometimes people feel like they need food, that they have a physical hunger, and that could be the case. But sometimes it could be actually a disguise for another type of hunger. And so there's lots of hungers that we have. There's the emotional hunger, there's movement hunger, there could be creative, intellectual, spiritual. And you can even break down that emotional hunger into boredom, sadness, excitement. You know, they're just, I mean, it could be a really long list. And so to help somebody tune inward and really learn, when is it that I'm hungry and when is it that I'm bored and I want to go be around people or I want to make something or I want to learn something new. And if you really do slow down and take time to learn about your body and your interests, it becomes more clear what you want in that given moment. But this is very hard. I don't want to minimize this at all because it can be really challenging to slow down and sit with yourself and notice what you feel and need. Because sometimes when we do that, we also become aware of our discomfort or anxiety. And so it's tricky at that same time that you're trying to tune inward. You're going to be fully aware of a lot of things that are going on with yourself. And that's why we usually turn outward and use distractions, you know, whether it is TV or food, or even distracting with lots of social engagements. I mean, these could all be ways to avoid turning inward. But getting to that place where you can differentiate between your hungers can be really, really amazing and eventually actually leading to a very balanced life.
I'm glad you said that because as I'm listening to you thinking, I'm like, it just sounds like balance.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a great way to think of it too.
Well, and also I want to mention that, you know, as intuitive eating applies to eating disorders, they talk very specifically in the book about readiness for intuitive eating. And there are five things that people need to be able to do in order to be intuitive eaters. And one of them that goes exactly with what you're saying is the ability to recognize and willingness to deal with feelings. So you would have to really know what you are hungering at that moment in time in order to be an intuitive eater.
Right.
Definitely.
Yeah. And it's a whole process. And that's, you know, why, especially with those who have eating disorders, they have a range of treatment professionals. They have the dietitian, the therapist, maybe sometimes the psychiatrist. They have their medical professionals. And because there's a lot coming up when they're starting to work through their relationship with food, and they need that type of support and guidance to manage all of the things that are coming up. So, again, I think it is important to stress that we're not suggesting that this is somehow easy. You know, we are born with this intuitive eating, but we are all inundated with lots of social and cultural and family messages, and we have to navigate through all of them and really figure out what's best for us and our body. And that can be, you know, all levels of work and challenge, more challenging for some than others. And so it just really depends where somebody's at in their life when they decide to start to tune more inward.
And it's not even to say that people who are intuitive eaters are intuitive eaters all the time.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I've also heard Evelyn say that you can't be an intuitive eater if you're stressed, depressed, tired, or sick. Because if you're any of those four things, you're so overloaded that you can't really be in touch with what's going on with you physically. So it's a nice goal, but it's not like 100% of the time I am an intuitive eater and I do this correctly.
Right.
And my patients have a hard time with this one too, because we talk about what is normal eating, and sometimes normal eating is overeating and sometimes it's undereating. And then we talk about, this is back to Ellen Satter, that sometimes we eat for emotional reasons. You know, that is real life. We all do that occasionally. So it definitely isn't an easy thing to do.
And that would fit the idea behind the practice of intuitive eating. You know, it's a practice because you're always practicing and you're never an expert at it. And that's that mindfulness that's woven in to this whole approach as well. That it's, you know, it's always just a practice.
Exactly. Yeah, I like to think of that that way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's wrap up there and just take a moment to really notice how amazing your body is, because this is so neat what we're talking about here, Kelly, right? I mean, that our bodies can tell us not only when we're hungry and full, but sometimes even what types of food we want in that moment, how much of it, you know, and not even just that moment, like we can get cravings that are hours before a meal, like, okay, later today, I want to make this food. I'm really wanting this, you know, and then going beyond food that our body tells us when we're tired, when we need to rest, when we want to be around people or when we want to be alone. It's just so, so cool that the body communicates in all these different ways. And if we can take that time to tune inward, it will tell us.
Mm-hmm.
So if any of our listeners have other future topics you'd like us to go more in depth with, please feel free to email us at info@savorpodcast.com. You can also message us through Facebook or tweet us any of your ideas or feedback. We always love to hear from you.
Yes, and then this week we would really like if you could try to remove any negative judgments that you have about food and just savor every food that comes across your plate.